What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to another episode of AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik, always at your ready. And John, you remember Mel Brooks. He was the founder of the Institute for the Very, Very Nervous. You remember that?
Very funny. Yes.
Well, he wrote High Anxiety. And I think that has morphed to some extent into the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism, because we have been very, very nervous about ISIS over the recent period, have we not?
We have. I mean, well, you just look at the news, what's going on in Europe. I mean, you got to be kind of scary.
Well, it's interesting because ISIS, for a period of time, I think every day we would see something that they were doing, and they were on the rampage. I mean, they were taking over large swaths of Iraq and Syria, and they were talking about this caliphate, and we saw Baghdadi up there saying that he is going to be the caliph of the caliphate, whatever. I don't know. I mean, it was really something out of the Bible almost. I mean, when you think about it.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it's crazy. But, you know, I don't know how we're going to deal with these people, because it seems like as soon as we kill some leader here, then somebody else pops up over here. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, I'll never forget during the Iraq War, we were always killing the number two leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Yeah. And all of a sudden, there was no number two. I would rather be number one, because they never seemed to get killed. But number two was always getting killed. I don't know. It's one of these things where we try to figure out, to what extent do we focus our energies on these extremists, or do we let the process just unfold and let the people in the Middle East sort these things out and hope that any American intervention just doesn't bring them to our shores? So I think there's a real mixed bag of attitudes that we have here in the United States.
Absolutely, absolutely, because we're bringing refugees in, and now we can't check all them out. I don't know. It's a real pickle. It really is.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you think about it, we do get very nervous, and we have had random after 9/11. We have blunted a lot of attacks, we know. We have had a few attacks, the Boston bombing being central among them, San Bernardino. There have been attacks. Some have been homegrown. But when we think about it, every day in the news, John, we have mass murderers. We've got serial killers. We've got domestic violence murders. And yet we really focus so much on when there is one attack from someone who is an extremist of the Muslim variety, as opposed to saying we've got a lot of our own homegrown.
That's true. You know, you think about it, how many people are dying from other things that at a much greater rate. And you're right. But, you know, that's what the media focuses on. So that's why it gets our attention.
So there are some who say, you know, that we're fighting the war only using certain of the tools that we need, that we've got to change the mindset in the Middle East. We've got to use social media in a much more effective way. There are many out there telling us what we have to do. And for a period of time on our radio program, John, we were talking about ISIS all the time. Now, ISIS has been pushed back to some extent. And we know that, of course, in what's, you know, going on in Mosul in Iraq. We know that they're holding on to Raqqa, but that is the next area where we're hoping to dislodge them. It's something that is not top of mind every day the way it was about 2 years ago. I don't think we're focused on it quite the way we were then. What do you think?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the end game here. I mean, we're going in, we're sending more, we're taking them out, we're sending more people in. What really is, so we're going to leave again and they're going to reappear? I mean, that's what I can't figure out.
I guess one of the questions is, I mean, how do we build systemically a better Middle East? I mean, how do we help them to have better administration of the Middle East so that these extreme views don't take hold to some extent among the population or spread out into the West? How do we do that? I don't know. Well, because they've got some pretty bad leaders over there.
Well, plus they're schooling the kids. And this is where we fell short in the Middle East when we've been in there in the past, when we went into Afghanistan and helped them with the Russians. Then we leave. And we don't do anything to help the people get back on their feet. So, you know, this is what we get, really.
I mean, but then there are some who say that George W. Bush back in 2000 said no nation building, and then he became a pretty good nation builder, or attempting to do that. And that hasn't totally worked out, as we know. Afghanistan, now Donald Trump having to once again recommit to Afghanistan. So I think your question is really a good one. What is the end game here? But I think what most people are concerned about is that whatever metastasis is going on at times in the Middle East, seeping out of the Middle East and into Western countries. So what do we do about that? And always to be vigilant, of course. And we had on our broadcast radio program Dr. Anne Spicard.
Yeah, she was very good.
She's really good.
Yeah.
And she runs this International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. And she has been all over the world taking a look at this issue. And in fact, John, she has written so many books. And she's talked to a lot of the people involved in these movements, or those who have defected, for example, from ISIS. She has one book, ISIS Defectors, Inside Stories of the Terrorist Caliphate, and then another book, Talking to Terrorists. You know, at some point, we have got to understand that mindset. We really do.
Well, we got to try at least, but I don't know. I don't know if we can get into the head, because they're still in the 8th century somewhere, and I don't know if we can get there.
Well, we do have to understand the people who migrate to the Middle East from the West, why they're as disaffected in the West as they are, and why they are attracted to some of these philosophies. And then we've got to understand why second generations within Europe and the United States at times decide to carry out these heinous acts against those who have taken them into these various cultures. Now, maybe we have to ask ourselves, though America, I think, has done a pretty good job of this, why have they not been absorbed, embraced in the way that they would like to into various cultures?
Well, I don't think, you know, it's like this is supposed to be the melting pot, but I don't see that from, there's certain cultures that just don't seem to want things their way, not the way we do it.
Well, I know we're going to do a future podcast that deals with the stigma that comes at times with being a Muslim in America today. But having said that, John, I mean, there are many, and I would say the vast majority of Muslims in the United States who have really embraced whatever their professions are. Many are doctors. I mean, there are so many who are contributing so mightily. And it's just a matter of why, even among those who are very successful in the United States, perhaps some of their progeny are disaffected for some reason. We got to kind of figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think every ethnic group that's come to the United States at one time has had problems, you know,
at the beginning. Yeah.
But they've managed to, you know, the Italians did, you know.
Oh, the Irish did.
The Irish.
I mean, they were not looked upon with any favor. I mean, we think of it today that everybody's been so roundly accepted. You're right. I mean, those are tough battles that have gone on. And we forget the immigration wars, and we forget.
There's always a pushback. But then they marry in, and, you know, things change. And I don't know if that's actually going to happen with.
Well, maybe we're just on the cusp of some of this. We've got to wait another generation. But why don't we talk, though, to Dr. Spicard? She is the head of the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. And again, author of these many books. She's an adjunct professor at Georgetown University, and somebody who really has an understanding of the mentality of ISIS and these extreme groups. And she's doing what she can to help educate us. So why don't we go to her?
Let's do that.
All right. Thank you, John.
Dr. Ann Speckhard is with us, and I don't think anybody has taken a closer look at the many practices of ISIS. She's written at least 6 books on the topic and is the director of the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. Dr. Speckhard, we know that during the campaign there was a lot said about ISIS and the fact that we were going to brutally put down ISIS. It does seem as if ISIS is on the run, we saw in Mosul, but is that because of government policy here in the U.S. and with our allies, or what else is going on that is having an impact on ISIS at this time?
Well, definitely we've heavily assaulted their sanctuaries and the territories that they held, and we should give the Iraqi forces credit for that and our own air support and all the special forces support on the ground. So they are on the run, but I don't expect them to go away.
And why is it that you feel, you've written about the first 100 days of the Trump administration, radical Islamic terrorists, how is President Trump doing in his first 100 days in office? Well, now it's 200 days. So do you have a different perspective? Because you were rather tough on him in terms of your assessment of how well he's done vis-a-vis ISIS.
Well, I might have been tough on him, but I look at terrorism as a bipartisan issue. I don't think we should politicize it either side of the aisle. We're all Americans and we all face this threat together. But the reason I don't think ISIS is going away is they've created thousands of propaganda films and memes. They've put them all on the internet, and they don't need much of a place or many people to keep running their digital caliphate. And they've created this dream that people are buying into all over the world. And they managed to get 38,000 foreign fighters from 100 different countries to physically relocate to Islamic State. That's amazing. So the dream has some traction, and I think it's going to continue to have that traction, and they're going to continue to try to prey on people through the internet. And they're also looking for new places to relocate. When I was just in Southeast Asia, Mindanao had really heated up, and there were 5 foreign fighters from ISIS that were killed in Marawi, which is really concerning. So, you know, we don't know where are they going to try to go to, because they're certainly on the run.
If the caliphate itself, which was best represented by the foothold that they were making in Iraq and Syria, is in jeopardy, what is it that now people are flocking to them for? Is it that they just find themselves to be symbiotic with the movement, or do they still hold out a lot of faith that a caliphate can be established?
Well, ISIS and al-Qaeda have always said it's a long game, you know, and been willing to play the long game, although ISIS jumped the gun and established their caliphate. But they don't call it losing that they're losing their territory. They just say it will come later. And what they're selling is a dream of a utopia and an alternative world governance. So anybody that's troubled and that they can get their hands on and get to resonate to the idea that Muslims are under attack, that Muslim lands are under attack, that Islam itself is under attack, then they can try to move them into this state of mind where they buy onto the dream and are willing to give their lives for it.
The messages that have come out of these occupied, if we call it that, territories of the caliphate, what message did come out about the governance style of ISIS when they have been in control?
Oh, it's just horrific. We just put out a report today from our center, that's the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. We put out a report on ISIS prisons, and it was horrible to write. The things that they did to people, the torture, arresting women because they weren't dressed properly, putting them in cells with severed heads, with skeletons, torturing them in ways you don't want to hear about, just unbelievable torture and ruling by terror. I mean, definitely ISIS is a hear and obey totalitarian organization, and No one liked them.
But why is it that anybody would be moved to take up their cause?
It's puzzling, isn't it? The reason is they argue that all the things that they did and that they were doing were necessary because they were in the midst of a revolution. So they had to take over the territory and kill their enemies. And once they got through the revolution phase, then it was going to be this beautiful caliphate. So people still believe that. But that's why we're doing our project called Breaking the ISIS Brand, where we interview people on video that have been part of ISIS who are now willing to denounce the group. And we think it's really important to get that message out to people that are consuming ISIS products so that they begin to see that even insiders, people that were serving the group, are saying this is a group that's un-Islamic, corrupt, and barbaric.
For those of us who look at this from afar, we recall that just about every day ISIS had information up on social media. They were also getting into our popular press with some horrific acts. I mean, there was so much more about them, I'd say 2 to 3 years ago. What is it that we're missing? What is still going on actively, aggressively, and effectively using social media and other communication devices that many of us who have perhaps taken our eye off the ball, it's a rather tumultuous time in America, as we know, with so many other issues. What are we missing?
Well, there's two things. One is we like to believe that, and we do have the best military in the world, so we like to believe that when our military defeats somebody, it's over. But it's not over, and we've seen this in Iraq already. And unless there's good government security and a good judicial system, all the reasons that ISIS arose in the first place are still there. And there's plenty of people, there's 500,000 kids that grew up under ISIS, in the territory that they controlled, in Iraq, and that's not even naming Syria. So if good governance isn't put back in place and security ensured for the people and a fair and just judicial system, which a lot of people aren't seeing happening, it's probably just going to blossom into the third version of ISIS, the third version of Al-Qaeda, because ISIS was Al-Qaeda 2.0. And so that's disheartening, and we need to work hard politically to pressure Iraq to do the right thing. And then when we overtake ISIS in Raqqa to help put Syria back together. The second thing is ISIS has gotten really good. They're still on Twitter. They're still on Facebook. They're on all the main social media. But now they're taking a much lower profile and just looking for people that are vulnerable. And when they catch somebody, they move them over to Telegram or to WhatsApp, and then they really intensively work on them. And that's where we have to worry now, because ISIS still wants to show its strength and that it's still continuing to exist. And the way they're going to do that is with homegrown attacks. So we just saw a bomb or bomb-making materials shipped probably organized by a guy in Raqqa from Turkey to Australia. And it was plastic explosives. We've seen all kinds of homegrown attacks that have been inspired and directed by ISIS when they're directed through Telegram. And that's a headache for our law enforcement.
Yes, you tell us that these defectors globally, there's a plan for them to shave their beards, blend into society, mounting urban guerrilla warfare and terrorist attacks. So this is what we're beginning to see more and more of.
It is what we are seeing more and more of. They've really focused their attacks on external versus internal. And it's not defectors. I mean, the defectors are the people that have left. It's people that are still in. Or attracting mentally ill people. I mean, it doesn't take much. You get a mentally ill person or a really lonely person on Twitter or Facebook or any of them and start lavishing attention on them. It's basic grooming. And then suck them into, you'll be a real hero if you carry out this violence. And in the U.S., all they need to go do is buy an assault rifle or rent a big truck. And they've got the weapon that they need to hurt a lot of us. So we've got to be worried about them reaching out over the internet to disenfranchised communities and disturbed people. Thankfully, in our country, our Muslim population is much better integrated, and it's really important we keep it that way. And that we don't become suspicious of each other, because then that plants the seeds for people like ISIS to try to recruit.
How much has American intervention in the Middle East contributed to some of the hate-filled activities that we in the U.S. fear greatly? For example, even as late as March 17th of 2017, we had the U.S. airstrike that killed lots of Iraqi civilians in Mosul. Is that the type of event that we really need to avoid, because this is the type of propaganda ultimately that is used by ISIS to stir things up even more?
Anytime we kill civilians, whether we do it by accident or by choice as collateral damage, it's going to show up in some film somewhere claiming that the West is indeed attacking Muslims and Muslim lands. And that's unfortunate. In that instance, I was really proud of our military because they did an investigation and they took responsibility for it. And you know, that's a country that I want to live in, that's honest about what they do and takes responsibility for what they do. But, of course, that can be spun in really ugly ways.
You say that, of course, while we're not making this a partisan issue, you did find fault, perhaps, with President Trump in the first 100 days when he said that theater commanders have been unshackled, everyone's been unshackled to do their job. You say that that is fraught with the possibility that these independent actors now who are representing the United States might overreach. Explain your concerns in that regard.
Well, we really got to stay to rules of engagement. We have to be careful that we don't attack civilians when we think we're attacking ISIS. And I can tell you our Syrian researcher just told us a horrible story of his family members watching a civilian building get hit by coalition bombs. I don't know if they were ours, and then going to dig out the survivors and getting hit again and getting killed. And, you know, that doesn't make friends. So, of course, we want to strike and strike hard at ISIS, but we really want to be a careful and thoughtful military and stay within the rules of engagement. So encouraging anyone to step out of that is a mistake.
Well, do we have a clear enough strategy so that people on the ground, while they might be given the freedom to make more independent judgments about what they see on the ground, that they know strategically what we're trying to accomplish now?
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, I can give you that. My husband served 2 years in Iraq and said Washington likes to get on the civics and micromanage. And when you're on the ground, you've got the best view. But you also need clear guidance from your superiors of what is within limits and what is without limits. You know, in that piece, we talked about the mother of all bombs, that, you know, is that really necessary? Did we need to do that? Did that have the effect that we wish for it to have? Or does it just create anger?
What was the psychological ripple of that mother of all bombs, as you see it, from your perspective on what's going on in the Middle East?
Well, it can be two things. It can be one, look at our military might and we're going to get you. And the other can be that we're willing to indiscriminately bomb without knowing exactly what we're hitting. And we're willing to use munitions that are just, you know, otherworldly, and that can create a backlash.
As we see ISIS losing territory in Syria and Iraq, we've also seen about 31,000 foreign fighters accept their dream of the caliphate. People have come from 86 countries. Where is the greatest level of activity that you're following that might concern us? I know Indonesia, we've heard, many other countries where it's spilled over. I'd be curious about where you see the fulcrum being these days for ISIS, and whether ISIS is beginning to merge with some other of the extremist groups like Al-Qaeda. Is there a coming together in any way?
I don't know if they'll come together. You know, leaders of terrorist groups are usually quite greedy about their power and the resources that they're able to control. So I don't know if they're willing to come together, and there's a lot of bad blood between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But they might. They have common goals. As far as where they will be active in the world in the future, I think Europe is the battleground. There were the most foreign fighters from Western Europe came from France. France and Belgium both have a really bad problem with their North African immigrant population. Some saying that they failed to integrate, others saying that they weren't allowed to integrate. And it's probably both of those statements are true, but either way, it's a really disenfranchised, alienated, and marginalized community. And they have produced people that bombed the Brussels airport, that carried out the attacks in Paris upon civilians. And I think we're going to see more of that, because those populations are still there, and none of their political problems have been solved, their social problems. So looks like ISIS can still speak to them. Central Asia is probably an area that we've got to watch. Afghanistan, for sure. And Southeast Asia looks like Mindanao is a hot spot right now, and possibly Indonesia.
This is Dr. Anne Speckard, and she heads the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. And we think of Jordan as one of those countries that really has been stable and a great ally of the United States. You recently did a report, The Jihad in Jordan, Drivers of Radicalization into Violent Extremism in Jordan. How important is that development with so many refugees, moving over from Syria into Jordan, and the potential destabilization of the Jordanian regime?
I hope that we will take action for that not to happen. I don't think it's the refugees coming in that are destabilizing Jordan, however. Mm-hmm. They've had a jihadi movement for a long time. Zarqawi, the founder of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, was Jordanian. Almost all the main leadership of al-Nusra in Syria came from Jordan. And then they later, a lot of them switched over to ISIS. So these have been people that, for their own reasons, believed that an Islamic caliphate was better than the government that they were living under. And what I heard over and over again when I was in Jordan is no futures for the common people, no futures, a feeling of corruption and anger. Mm-hmm. And most people deal with that in their own way, but it makes some of them vulnerable to the flavor of the day, which is ISIS or militant jihadi thinking. And we have had attacks against Americans inside of Jordan recently. We had military men killed in a base. They were training Free Syrian Army soldiers with Jordanians. We had a Jordanian policeman kill our guys. So it's happened more than once, and it's worrisome.
Do you feel that the list of grievances that many in the Middle East who are Muslim have and might fall into the arms of an ISIS or Al-Qaeda, are their grievances greater against the West overall and the United States for the many times that we have interceded there, or is it against their own autocratic leaders in the Middle East?
I really think it's against their own leaders, and they look at us as propping up their leaders. And the truth is, we do give an awful lot of money into a lot of these countries. I think we give $1 billion into Jordan every year, and Egypt, we were giving a large amount of money. I think we still are. And, those are trade-offs, but it can be seen as we're, pulling the puppet strings. But it really is problems with their own governance. And when there's large groups of people that don't feel that they totally have their rights and that don't see their futures, and the Middle East has a youth bulge as well, it's worrisome, and something's got to be done about it.
You have written books like ISIS Defectors, Inside Stories of the Terrorist Caliphate, The Bride of ISIS, Talking to Terrorists. What is it that might surprise most of us who never really have these kinds of exchanges with individuals who have been involved and some of whom have really been rejected by the caliphate or themselves have rejected what they thought was a philosophy that they wanted to adhere to? What would shock us if we were listening into some of those conversations you've had?
Well, there's plenty that would shock you. I mean, the horrible brutality of ISIS, the things that are done to people would be really shocking. But on the other side, just that these are human beings, just like us. And a lot of them are just hoping for justice, for dignity, for a chance in life. And they buy into something that they believe will deliver it for them. And they're wrong, of course. But, you know, it's like anybody that gets frustrated and decides violence is the answer. It never is. It's never a good answer. But that's what I find over and over.
Well, are there alternatives? I mean, what is it that is being offered as an alternative life and a sense of hope and opportunity beyond their messaging? Because we've heard in the United States that our State Department has tried to negate some of these messages. How ineffective have we been and others in suggesting that there is a different future?
Well, I don't think in the Middle East we can suggest that there's a better future because, there's nothing credible to support that. So, you know, we can appeal to people's consciences to, to strive for good. We can support religious leaders that tell people that you should strive, according to morals, not according to violence. But there isn't really a hopeful message for many people in the Middle East. So we can give the negative message that ISIS isn't who they say they are. And that's an important message, too, but it's not enough, of course.
Do we see the move to modernity really taking hold at all? I know that in Saudi Arabia, where they practice Wahhabism, one of the more extreme ways that Sunni Islam is reflected, that in fact there are some modest reforms going on, a young crown prince who's coming into power. I mean, is there any hopefulness at all in terms of the politics of the region that you see?
Yeah, I do. I think that, I sort of feel like Qatar got scapegoated recently for being a supporter of terrorism and the Al Jazeera channel as well. But on the other hand, it's really good to hear Saudis and Emirates and the rest of them say, this is wrong. We don't need this. I mean, they also have to clean their own houses. You know, it's funny to see certain ones pointing their fingers when they're probably just as guilty. And in terms of modernity, I mean, you see people living these schizophrenic lives where they, say that they adhere to one thing and then, drink alcohol at night or, fly to Beirut and take off their burqa and dance in a nightclub. It's kind of strange. And, those things do have to be worked out.
When we're looking at Syria and the terrible strife that has gone on there and the appalling human rights conditions, is that now the centerpiece of what's going on in the Middle East? For a long time, everybody thought the flashpoint was Israel and the Palestinians. So put in perspective, when they're reading their newspapers in various capitals in the Middle East, what's getting the most attention these days among, the ordinary citizens?
Well, one thing that's really interesting is that it used to be everyone blamed Israel for everything in the Middle East. And if not Israel, us. And now you hear a lot more talk about sectarianism. And I think that really got unleashed in Iraq during Al-Qaeda 1.0, Zarqawi's assault on all the Shia, and then the fighting back, of course. So there was a lot of sectarian violence, a lot of killing, Shia and Sunni killing each other. And as the politics shifted in Iraq and the Shia government came forward or or more Shia dominance, where it had been Sunni dominance in the past. But it really shifted things. And now in Syria, and probably in Iraq too, we're seeing basically proxy wars, and we're seeing sectarianism play out. And what the answer to that will be, I really can't tell you. But it's not focused on Israel in the same way anymore.
And is that a good thing?
It's probably good for Israel, you know, to have the attention off of them. But it doesn't solve their problems. I mean, they still have to come up with some kind of a two-state solution or something that the Palestinians don't feel so angry over what they claim is occupation. You know, they have to come up with good governance on both sides, and that's not easy either. I mean, we've basically seen the third intifada in Israel with the knife attack.
If President Trump were to call upon you and say, Dr. Speckhard, I have read a lot of what you've been writing. I am fascinated by the people with whom you are talking, defectors from ISIS. I want some of your insights, and I want to know what you think we should be doing with our policies, both military and diplomatic, in the region. And if you had just a few moments with him, what would you tell him?
I'd tell him to do a lot more soft power. A lot more soft power. The military might is good, but we can do so much effective counter-messaging if we're careful with it and like our own program, not to plug our own program. But, you know, if you get a defector to say this group is un-Islamic, corrupt, and barbaric, that's powerful. And for $1.5 million, which is the cost of a Tomahawk missile, you can spread that message all over the world. And we've done it for less than that, actually, and managed to have people in four continents using these video denouncing of ISIS by insiders used in prisons and CVE work and prevention, all kinds of things. And prevention is the name of the game. You've got to put some money into prevention. And so I would say get a balance with the soft power.
And we read where the State Department is under-personed right now, and they just are not filling a lot of the positions that are necessary, so that Rex Tillerson seems like a man alone on a diplomatic hunt, though we know that Jared Kushner is making some attempts in the Middle East. Should we be concerned that we are underplaying the amount of resource that is needed in order to fight against some of the messaging that is coming against us in the Middle East?
Absolutely. I mean, our diplomats are some of our strongest workers, and we've lost a lot of them. A lot of them were told to go home, and they retired early. And, you know, these are people that have spent years of their lives living outside of the country, studying foreign languages, studying foreign cultures, really understanding how people think. And our military does that too, and that's good. But in both cases, that's the kind of soft power that we need. And we need experienced people at the top, active, and supporting our Secretary of State and supporting our entire government efforts. And when they're missing in action, that's really concerning.
Okay, Dr. Ann Speckhard, I can't thank you enough. You have used your psychological capabilities and your long training to look at the Middle East and the drivers of extremism, and we thank you for all of your work, and thank you for coming by today on America Trends Podcast.
You're welcome.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us.
But. Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, at Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did
yeah,
you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out
quiz.
Now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that,
yeah,
too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? You know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste and you get more programming like this and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let
You're
us
not
out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.